dbkmediaservices.com. Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SBC fans, and welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm Shane Combs of SBCSportsZone.com, joined as I always am throughout the fall by my brother Matt. And, you know, Matt, as I look at this week's agenda, I guess we have a lot of our top teams across the fall, Dean of Volleyball, Uniota Golf, Uniota Cross Country team, even had the soccer rivals get together from around the Cider Valley this week. And then it was kind of a tough football week for the league, but overall, we got a lot to talk about. Just what's on your mind here as we get ready for week four, which means SVC play in football.
Yeah, that's always a time where it seems like it really takes off for us, too, on the show, just having so much to talk about with football getting the league play. I thought, yeah, obviously we've had some teams, Paint Valley and Zane Trace jumped to mind with really impressive non-league results in their first three. So there's going to be a lot more to talk about with football. Obviously, we've got we had a big game in volleyball, and with Adina on top right now, and cross country and golf are going to be winding down shortly. So you're talking about end of the season tournament stuff. So yeah, it's kind of an exciting time right now in the fall.
Well, it is, and we've had a lot of different things going on here on SVC Sports Talk. We're in the mix of working with one of our main sponsors, Adina Sports Medicine. They're going to be providing us some good feedback. I'm in the middle of kind of surveying some different athletes, as we've talked about, and so all of that's still kind of on the ongoing agenda. So we'll continue to visit that throughout the fall. But the one thing, when we think sponsorship, we think Crown Hill Golf Club. And Matt, I guess that's at the forefront this week, because by the time a lot of people listen to this show, I know Monday night SVC match number 5 will be at Crown Hill Golf Club. So I thought it was a great opportunity to talk a little bit about that course. You know, it's one of my real favorite golf courses to play throughout the year, and I think it's going to really play a role in the league race. Matt, before we get into some of the details, just your thoughts on that golf course, maybe what type of player it would favor.
Well, it depends a little bit what side they play. If they play the front nine
is what I was told in a text from Kevin Schultz today.
Okay, well, I think the front nine is a little bit easier in my opinion than the back. There's not quite as much trouble to get into in terms of getting yourself into, you know, real jams with penalty shots, things like that, lost balls. But it's still not an easy track by any stretch of the imagination. I think it favors somebody who, and we talked about this a little bit with some of the courses they're going to be playing late in the year, whether it be Crown Hill or JC's or I don't know if they're still going up to Foxfire at the end of the year or where they're going there.
I believe it's Pickaway now.
But some of these courses are going to favor guys who can be accurate with some sort of wood off the tee, 3-wood driver. You're probably not going to get away just with hitting iron off the tee to keep it in play anymore, because you're going to leave yourself such long second shots. Obviously, the par threes are important. You're going to see a couple. I think difficult par threes tomorrow or Monday at Crown Hill. So anyway, I think it's one of the tougher golf courses, but it's a beautiful golf course. The greens are always in good shape, so it's fair. It's just you're starting to get in now to some of the golf courses that are going to be a little bit longer.
Well, I agree. I think, from the blue tees, for a lot of people that go up and play, you're getting up around 6,800 yards on the front. But as I look at the scorecard, the tee boxes that they'll most likely use going to play closer to a 6,300. So when you look at that on the front nine, that breaks down to they're going to play it somewhere between a 3,100 and a 3,300, depending on how they decide to set it up. Both par fives are somewhat reachable for some of the better players. And you mentioned the driver and how the long iron can come into play. I guess, Matt, if I was going to look at this, some of the top players, a medal round's probably going to probably be right around par, maybe just slightly over. But I think what's really interesting here is what the driver and some of the long irons that come into play. Even a couple of par threes are only playing 150, 160, but both of those greens on the front side are really, really difficult. Don't you think it could be really interesting to see what happens to some of the three and four men scoring across the league? That's what could really, really impact the outcome come Monday night. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's we've talked about this in shows past where – you know, where on some courses you'll see a three-man, four-man, you know, kind of creep up and throw out a, you know, a really good score, 37, 38, 39, something like that. I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult on this course. Those two par threes you mentioned, whatever the scorecard says, it says, but they play a number eight plays longer than what it is, being straight uphill. The other par three, number what, five, I guess, I think, is a really difficult green, especially if you miss it left.
So, five and seven, I believe, are the par threes there. I think that's right.
Well, either way, but they play a little tougher than what they say. So, and like you say, I think with these golf courses being a little bit longer, the depth starts to show up. And I think that's what we've talked about with Unioda and Piketon. It's not that these other teams, especially Southeastern St. Trace, don't have some really, really good players that can go play any golf course and do well. But when you start having to put four scores out there and Unioda and Piketon can throw you know, five, six decent players out there and figuring four of them are going to stick somewhere, I think that's where the advantage starts to come in.
Right, and just to clarify that, it is five and eight, the par threes right there on the front side. So, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. We appreciate that sponsorship. A really, really nice golf course, a little bit unknown at times to some people down in Ross County area. I think the more under some ownership here, they do a great job with it. And be a lot of fun to look back and see where the league race is going to go as the Unioda and Piketon sure to battle it out. So, well, Matt, up first this week, we're going to talk some football. The scoreboard was not a favorable one in terms of SVC teams, and one outcome had a fan asking a great question about one of the league's top preseason teams. Well, Matt, as I go back to week three here, last non-league set of games for the SVC, I know a lot of leagues a little bit smaller around Southern Ohio, they'll still be in non-league action a couple more weeks. But with the SVC play, of course, week four will start SVC play. And as I go to the scoreboard, it rounded out there on Saturday night. Westfall played pretty well against a good opponent, but fall to Circleville, and it was just kind of a tough week. I know Wellston beats Edina, Northwest beats Huntington, Valley beats Piketon, Eastern Pike beats Southeastern, and then Waverly, somewhat of a shocker to some, I think, beat Unioda 16-13 with, you know, Paint Valley and Zane Trace obviously getting the wins. But, you know, Matt, I guess the inbox I come home to, the Unioda score was the one had people asking questions. And late Friday night, a great question to the website concerning Unioda. Let's look a little closer at the question as we make this our football focus entering SVC action.
Shane, I started thinking about Unioda after the loss tonight. Entering week four in SVC play, do you see them as being closer to Paint Valley and Zane Trace at the top? Or do you see them as being closer to the next line of teams such as Piketon, Edina, and Westfall?
You know, Matt, I really debated. I thought this was one of the more intelligent, one of the better questions that we've had come into the website in a while. And it really had me debating. And I kind of had my thought or the opinion that I felt like I was going to go with on SVC Sports Talk. But at the same time, I felt like, let's throw it out there for some great discussion. And boy, did Twitter and Facebook, the fans really step up and give some good feedback. Before I get to that, let me just kind of share my opinion and see where you're coming from. I guess I look at Uniota's full roster maybe as being closer to that middle group the email refers to. But I think any time you have elite talent like an Eric Hosley and Austin Hauser, some guys like that, boy, are you dangerous on any given night to beat just about anybody on your schedule. So, you know, Matt, that's kind of my take in terms of maybe the full roster and then looking at those individual talents. Just your thoughts before we get into some of the fan feedback.
Well, if I were going to take the easy way out, I'd say, you know, they're sort of at a middle level sort of by themselves in this league. I know it sounds like a little bit of a cop-out, but I don't know. You know, I think Paint Valley and Zane Trace, I think because of the number of weapons they have offensively, I think they have so many different guys they can sort of lean on. I think they have a real advantage because they're going to score points. I think Uniota may have nights, and you saw this against Waverly evidently, where you run into a team that has enough athletes to sort of neutralize or at least slow down Hosley a little bit, you know. Where do they turn? Where does Uniota turn if Hosley's not returning punts for a touchdown or running a ball 50 yards for a touchdown? Where do you get the rest of your scoring from? You know what I mean? So, but at the same time, because of those guys and because of a little bit of a depth, and I think because of their defense, I still think Uniota's defense is pretty good. I don't know that I could put them very close to those next three teams either, because I feel like those next three teams have some holes that Uniota doesn't have. I don't know. Which one are they closer to? I probably would lean toward still that upper tier, but I don't think they're quite as complete. And it's not just because of this week three. I've said this all along. I don't think they're quite as complete as Paint Valley and Zane Trace.
Well, and I think just to piggyback what you're saying there a little bit, you know, when you look at a Zane Trace attack, obviously, Dunkel's a really special athlete, but you have a little Mowry on the outside, some Love and Rittenhouse in the backfield, you know, Paint Valley with the McFaddens and a Hatfield, even a Caleb Johnson gives you a different look. There's a lot of different ways you can do it, where when I break down this Uniota team, I guess my concern is a Hosley or an Oyer is pretty much doing 90% of the ball carrying. And when you consider they haven't really thrown the ball more than a handful of times per game, it just you feel like that there's going to be more and more teams really load that box up, and that's going to be an issue. You know, Matt, let's take a look at some of the fan feedback. Because like I said, on Twitter and Facebook, we had some great feedback. You know, a lot of names around the area, Bud Lytle, Gail Mahaffey, Eric Cox, Dave Shoemaker, all giving some nice feedback. A couple in particular I wanted to look at Del Haynes as a longtime Uniota person. I really thought we could give us a nice perspective from, you know, in-house, if you would, from a Uniota perspective. And, you know, he was talking about looking big picture, not just, you know, this year, but what another 8-2, 9-1 type of season could do for a Uniota. And, you know, Matt, I guess I'll just ask you this. And maybe this is fair, maybe kind of a fair, unfair question, but if a Uniota were to go 7-3, 8-2, what do they have to do in your mind to take a positive step forward as, you know, they try to continue this momentum they've started in football over the last couple of years?
Well, I don't know if I'd put a number on it. I think that if you look at the history of Uniota's football program, which just, you know, just so happens with you and I, obviously, that this is a school that we know a little bit about or have followed. But if you look at the history of their football program, the major issue has been they haven't been able to get any consistency in the head coaching position. I mean, let's face it, they went through a stretch there where they changed head coaches on an average of every couple years. They've had a trouble getting consistency in that regard. I think because of that and because of the maybe not having the success for a school that does so well getting numbers out in every sport. In every sport they have, it just seems like gobs of kids, you know, coming out for the team, being on the team. It just seems like football is that one sport where the numbers have always been down a little bit. And I think that, you know, really just taking positive steps, continuing to have winning seasons, trying to have some success at the junior high and JV level, trying to put a keep a coach in place for an extended period of time. All those things, I think, are the things that – because we all know, I mean, let's be honest, and we've talked about it ad nauseum on this show, Uniota has some advantages that other league schools don't have in terms of, you know, the numbers, in terms of, you know, being able to set themselves up for success. But it hasn't happened in football on a regular basis like it has in other sports. And I think for it to happen, some of those things I just mentioned have to take place. So if they can just continue to have success, like Dale said, big picture, you know, have success 2, 3, 4 years in a row, I think it'll start to snowball a little bit.
Well, and I think the interesting word, I don't have it in front of me, but if I remember Dell's post correctly, I want to say he even referred to the years after Hosley, or again, I might be paraphrasing there a little bit, but again, he was looking beyond just this particular year. So now, Matt, as I continue to go on, I know Joe Holbert, who called the Paint Valley game with me back there in week one, he was also posting a little bit, and he and I have talked a little bit about, you know, Paint Valley does have the tough stretch in terms of the of some road games coming up, and that could be a factor. It was even a neat topic brought to my attention that I thought we might look at in more detail in the next 2 weeks, just how much is the home field advantage in football a factor in high school. But again, to stay on this topic for now, William Doyle Jr. was talking a little bit about what you're talking about, Uniota size. It's talking about how small the league was throughout with some division five and six schools and so forth, and how Uniota size should always be a factor. And I guess it goes back to the thing of, I think what's always offset that in football is because there hasn't been that great tradition. You look at what Uniota's accomplished in boys golf over the last 20 years. Boys cross country over the last 10 to 15 years, even their soccer program has been so elite. You know, Matt, it seems to me, if I'm making a comment on this, and as far as football goes, being a fall sport, that's kind of where some of the enrollment's been offset, and that's probably still where Uniota's still trying to tackle this problem and get some of their elite athletes out 2, 3, 4 classes in a row instead of just kind of looking at an Eric Hosley to get behind for a 4-year period. Would you say that's kind of a fair statement?
To an extent, I think that there are enough, you know, I think there are enough kids at Uniota to have good football teams, even though you have a lot of kids running cross country, even though you have kids playing soccer, even though you have kids playing golf. I think the issues go beyond that. I think that it's just been here recently, you know, where their head coaching situation has stabilized. You know, the coach they had previously was there for a few years, did a nice job. I don't think it was a situation where, you know what I mean, he was ran out. You know, I think he chose, I want to go do something else. They have somebody right there they're ready to bring in. The transition seemed pretty smooth. You didn't hear a lot about it. That's what I'm talking about. I think that's why Uniota football has been better here of late. And I think it will continue to get better if Uniota is able to continue to treat the situation the same as they have, if that makes sense. I don't think, you know, golf at Uniota has been good. They've had the same coach for 30 years or, you know, nearly.
Right.
Cross country has been good. They've had the same coach for a while who's very dynamic and gets a lot of kids involved, obviously. So again, a lot of it comes down to stability in that coaching position, excitement that surrounds the program. I think that Uniota football is certainly trending upward. And I think if they continue to do those things, it will, they'll get better. You can't just say, well, they're big, they've got numbers, they should be good every year. It's not as simple as that. You know, people love to use this enrollment argument as the end all be all. It's a factor, but it's not the only factor. You know, it's funny to me how, and you know, if Uniota is sort of the topic of conversation, we want to use the enrollment factor. But when Adina dominates the volleyball league, you don't hear Adina crying about numbers. They just go win volleyball championships. You know, it's a factor, but it's not the end all be all. But anyway, I think that the other factors I mentioned are more important going down the road for Uniota football.
Well, and what's been neat about all of the feedback is there's been a lot of support for Coach Metzler, and I think people feel like, again, things are going in the right direction. So as far as this fall goes, I guess we're not going to have to wait long because, again, with the schedule, you're only going to get about halfway into the league schedule, probably about 3 weeks, and Uniota, Zane Trace, and Paint Valley all kind of play their head-to-head matchups. So we're going to get a good feel for where we're at. So obviously we'll follow that here on SVC Sports Talk. And fans, you can still get involved. I know as late as we're taping here on Sunday night. I know as late as this afternoon, early evening, people still commenting on Twitter and Facebook. So SVCSportsZone.com, check us out on there and go on and let us know your thoughts. Well, Matt, as I mentioned in the opening, we had a big week throughout all sports. Up next, we have a volleyball fan reacting to last week's discussion. Well, SVC volleyball just about to the halfway point, and as we predicted, we're going to have a lot of 4- and 5-set matches. Uniota and Huntington played a 4-set match. Dina and Uniota play a 4-set match. This upcoming week here, we'll get to see a couple more head-to-head matches. And, you know, off of last week's question, Matt, the Huntington response was kind of mixed, to be honest. Some positive, some negative in terms of agreeing, not agreeing. The Uniota response was a little bit interesting. I'd made the comment late last week that I thought this Uniota group, in terms of depth and completion, had an opportunity over the next 2 to 3 years to maybe even be more dynamic than last year's championship group, and that kind of generated some neat response from Uniota past and present. And Zane Trace wins at Ironton over the weekend, and here the Lady Pioneers are quietly off to an 8-2 start. You know, we talked about a lot of 4- and 5-set matches. I thought they got a big win. We talked about that last week on the show, beating Southeastern in 5, and with them dominating in the non-league the way they have, here they are at 8-2 overall. So I guess, Matt, all that does is remind us just how good SVC volleyball is, because I think sometimes we have a tendency when we break from top half to bottom half to maybe not appreciate – I don't even know if appreciate's the right word. I mean, we see some volleyball that we don't consider maybe a high level here and there, but I tell you, when you get outside the conference and we continue to stay south of Columbus or over here east of Cincinnati, and in this case, I know Zane Trace even got down in the Northern Kentucky talent a little bit. SVC volleyball seems to remain elite. I guess we shouldn't be amazed by it, but sometimes when you stop and watch, you are still.
Yeah, you are. I mean, if you're not careful, you do take it for granted a little bit. And, you know, if you get a chance to watch volleyball in some other areas of the Southeast District, I think you come to appreciate even more the depth of talent in the SVC. I think in a lot of other leagues, you could take the best team in that league and they would do fine in the SVC. But when you start getting in the middle of the pack teams, they don't compare to the teams in the SVC, if that makes sense. So it's the depth of teams. Yeah. And excuse me, it's the depth of teams that I think make the league special. You see a Zane Trace, who, again, we've talked last couple of weeks about having good programs and coaches that have done it for a long time and do a good job. Well, Zane Trace is an example of that. So all of a sudden they sort of fly under the radar and you look and say, oh man, they're having a very nice year here, you know? So, again, it's fun to watch. It's fun to see the breakdowns when they get out of league. But it seems like in league play, I don't want to say stuff's clear cut, but it seems like things are starting to sort of take shape.
Well, I know what's kind of funny this week in the inbox is, you know, we've had a Huntington questionnaire and we've had Uniota come up a little bit, and you know, the Zane Trace I just mentioned. And this week's question, Matt, is asking us to start talking about the team in first place.
SVC Sports Zone. First, let me say I love the show and I appreciate the volleyball coverage. But how about we spend more time talking about the best team in the league instead of the teams chasing them?
Well, I tell you, this was a great question, too, because I got to thinking, Matt, and the more I think about Adina, and I started doing this after the Adina win over Uniota this past week, and I think where we maybe have messed up a little bit, and myself included, and I don't even know if messed up, because I think a lot of us still had Adina as kind of the favorite with a Uniota right there, and we're going to kind of wait and see. We knew Huntington Westfall was capable, but I think where we might have messed up with Adina a little bit is not appreciating what they returned. We understood that they were hit by graduation really hard from a year ago, but you know what I did is go back and look at last year's state box score, and when I looked through the states and the three sets that they played in the state tournament, I see names like Poehler and Putnam and Bossert and Carroll, and now Putnam's a junior and Poehler's a junior. They're providing great talent at the net. Obviously, Carroll is an outstanding passer. I know in our Adina Sports Medicine stats, she's leading the league in digs per set played. And then Bossert is a nice talent as well. Then you throw in all the JV talent, such as the Shea, et cetera, and so forth. And you know, you really have a nice product on the volleyball court. Putnam, about 3.6 kills per set. Chris Poehler, 3.3, hitting out of the middle there. As I mentioned with Carroll's passing, and then you throw in some people like a Rawlings is a nice complimentary hitter. They just have such great system. The distribution is good. The right people getting opportunities. And, you know, Matt, you talk all the time about program and tradition and things like that. It's when you get the opportunity, it's one thing to get varsity experience. We say, oh, that team's young. They're going to be pretty good here in a couple of years. And then it's another thing to be constantly playing in SVC matches where your jersey says Adina and you're getting everybody's best shot, and then you go through the tournament and then you get an opportunity, as they did a year ago, to play on high school's biggest stage. That's probably something we didn't give enough credit, and it probably shouldn't surprise us that the standings say what they do at this point.
Well, no, it doesn't. And you know, like we talked about with Uniota, Adina was in the same situation where they had some kids graduate. And, you know, oh, man, who's going to replace? Well, you've got people waiting to replace them. It's a great program. You know, they've developed these kids from a young age up. And, you know, it's the next man up, next girl up in this situation, mentality of, hey, one person graduates, who's next in line? And they just sort of come in, run their system and do their thing and have success. But, you know, I think in terms of what we've talked about on this show, I think the one thing about this show is it's people driven. You know, it's the right fans of the league who really tell us what to talk about. You know, we're not smart enough just to make this stuff up on our own. So we get these questions and we talk about them. And I think, that's probably the reason we haven't talked about much about Adina. A lot of times when you're just really good all the time, you know what I mean? People don't always talk about you. You don't flip on SportsCenter in December and get a lot of Spurs talk. You know what I mean? But when you do talk Spurs is when they win a championship at the end of the year. And that's usually when you start to talk Adina too. So there's going to be plenty of time to talk Adina, I have a feeling, with all the things that it looks like they can accomplish again this year.
Well, the other thing that jumped out at me, Matt, is the strength of system. I talked last week in a question about how I thought the setter position was so valuable in terms of getting the right person's hands on the ball on that second ball, and then getting the ball distributed out to your hitters. I know in the Uniota match, you play a four setter. It's tight all the way through. I believe no team led by more than five at any point the entire night. And you can see by those four final scores in the sets that it was pretty much anybody's set as you got to the 19, 20, 21, 22 mark. And I saw on the stat sheet, Putnam gets 50 attempts. Poehler gets 44. And you know, the other thing I look at is on the season stats is we look at the Adina stat leaders a little bit closer on our Adina Sports Medicine page. Shea with 213 assists now. No other player on their team has 10. So, I mean, you talk about Carroll and company doing the job with the passing and getting the ball into Shea's hands and then her putting the ball and understanding where it's supposed to go. There's a lot of teams that simply don't get their Putnams or their Poehlers, the 50 50 and 44 respective attempts to where you're just getting the opportunity to be most successful. I guess for people, Matt, that do not understand volleyball, it would be no different than the analogy I used last week where you have that point guard in basketball. And as a coach, you probably don't have to say so-and-so needs to get this many shots and so-and-so needs to get this many shots. But through teaching your system and having a point guard play under you, doesn't that just kind of become understood and it's kind of a learned trait of a point guard or, in this case, a setter?
Well, it is, especially in a good program, again, where they come up learning these things and watching these things. Because to me, especially at the high school level, I think the number one separating attribute, so to speak, a player can have is confidence. I think confidence is the one thing that really separates maybe one kid from another kid. And if you ever notice in a great program like Adena Volleyball, you'll get a girl that maybe comes off the JV team. You would think that, man, she's probably a little nervous, she's probably a little bit unsure, but that confidence starts to take over because A, you know the system. Because you've had it drilled in repetition, and you have confidence that, hey, we're Adena and we're going to win. You know, you feel that way, so that confidence helps. To me, it's a little different. Don't you think it's different when a player comes off of a JV team in a really good program like an Adena or Uniota here recently that's had a ton of success, comes to the varsity level as opposed to a team that maybe finished seventh place last year, and you're coming into that situation? One, you have probably better players around you. Two, you have a little bit more confidence in your system.
Well, you do, and. There's a lot that goes into what you practice against every night, what you do through the off season, and then there's another factor. I don't want to get ahead of myself, Matt, but later in the show we're gonna ask you a question as an athletic director that I think that's really important, because I agree. I think it comes down a lot of times to the player development and program development and so forth. So fans, again, you could use Twitter. You could use Facebook. Obviously, you can use our inbox at admin1@svcsportzone.com. We'd also encourage you to give us a call. Phone number is 740-569-3254. Well, Matt, we are going to finish the show this week, as I just said, by making you play AD, as I have a question concerning programs like Adena Volleyball, Uniota Cross Country, Paint Valley Wrestling, and the pressure they put on an athletic department. Well, Matt, again, this final segment is going to be brought to the fans by Crown Hill Golf Club, 740-986-GOLF. Again, looking forward to the role that fine golf course is going to play in our league race between Uniota and Piketon, as well as the other teams that, you know, you never know when one of these teams are able to jump in there and grab a first, second place finish, and you get one of those two place swings between the Shermans and the Red Streaks, and boy, could that really shake things. I know Cooper goes low for Uniota there last week at 33. I don't think it'll be that low this time around. I think you're going to see scores more around level par, especially with the temperatures and some of the conditions. But that'll be a lot of fun to look at. You know, but Matt, I wanted to end the show with plenty of time here to talk about a topic that seems to come up a lot. I know we run into it in baseball a little bit. And it really isn't just one school. It's really pretty much all over Southeast Ohio. As I talk to coaches and we schedule and we're talking doubleheaders or we're talking games, but it's really not just baseball, softball. It's really started to go across a lot of the different sports. And that's how far away you travel on a weekend or any time, really, for that matter, to play non-league games. And what happens is you look at like a Uniota Cross Country and the level they've been able to get to. I'm sure they need to get on the bus and drive a decent distance sometimes to find some of these higher level meets that they've been performing in and really performing quite well in. You see it. You see it a little bit in some of the golf programs trying to get out and play some of the different golf courses. You see it with Adina Volleyball. I know as I look at their schedule every year, they'll find their way over to Sydney Lehman Catholic, some of those places. I know a lot of times they'll go up into the Columbus area and they'll play some of the elite competition. You might see Westfall Volleyball do the same. I know Paint Valley Wrestling goes through it. A lot of times with the 3-4 elite wrestlers they've had, they can't, especially with some schools just now starting wrestling, they can't always find the competition they need nearby home. They need the opportunity once or twice a year to travel quite a distance to find some of the bigger elite tournaments to wrestle in. So I guess I ask you, Matt, athletic director wise, is this something that you've seen come up that you've had to kind of deal with? I know football, basketball, a lot of times it's not as big a deal because gates and different financial things probably end up offsetting each other. But some of these other sports, I know it can be a little tricky financially. Maybe just kind of walk us through the thought process from an athletic director standpoint on this topic.
Well, I've said this before. It depends on every school's different in the way they pay for their transportation for athletics. If you know where I'm at, the school that I happen to be at, we're fortunate that we don't pay like a per mile type of deal thing. You know, it's we pay the driver. So the length of the trip, other than the amount of hours the bus is gone, since we're paying an hourly rate for the driver, isn't a huge deal. But some schools have to pay like, you know, a dollar a mile, or let's say, or something. Well, then you start to get into some pricey situations. So I think it sort of depends. We've been fortunate. Like I said, I know we send our cross country team we've had a pretty good cross country team. We send them to Cuyahoga area every year for a big cross country meet up there. It's an overnight trip, you know, because it's overnight, that the team has to fundraise and sort of cover their hotel expense. The athletic department covers the transportation. I think it's different for different schools, but I think no matter what situation you're in, you know, as an athletic director, you try to be appreciative of your great programs and you want to reward them and you want to help them in any way you can. And if that means trying to cut back somewhere else, like if you need to get a Dean of Volleyball to the northern part of the state, or you need to get, you know, Uniona Cross Country or Paint Valley Wrestling, whatever example you just used, there's probably somewhere else you can save a few bucks to reward those kids. Because ultimately, you know, I know we've made fun of this, some people saying this before, but we are supposed to be in it for the kids, you know. So if, as an athletic administrator, you're in it for the kids, you're in it for the right reasons, you're going to try to do everything you can do to reward those kids. And if they've given your school a great program, let's give them an opportunity to leave the area and go compete a little bit. We can find the money somewhere.
Well, and it is, just to clarify too, I think the reason we use some of those examples is because of where those programs are compared to the area. A lot of times baseball, softball, things like that, you don't have to do that as much because there is plenty of elite competition within an hour of home. You know, there's right. So many great baseball programs and so forth. So I think that's where some of these unique situations come from. You know, Matt, the last thing I wanted to allow time for this week, and I'm glad we have a little bit of it, because I think it's going to lead in. We've been talking so much about the 3-sport athlete and the 2-sport athlete and the 1-sport athlete, and some college recruiting has started to come up too. We talked to Dylan Swingle, I know, last week. I know I've been in talk with some recruiters with some of my athletes, and I've been talking to some various coaches around the league as they have some kids that are looking both on the girls and boys side. You know, Matt, you played some college basketball and so forth. So I guess I'd want to ask you this question. If you go back to that time in college and you think of your studies and you think of just your living a little bit more independently, playing basketball, imagine trying to take on a second sport. You were at the Division III level there at Wilmington. Talk to the fans a little bit about the difficulty in your mind of trying to take on more than one sport at the college level.
Well, I mean, there's a couple different things that come to mind. One, you know, the obvious answers are your time management, you know, just having time for it. Another obvious answer would be your physical health and can you just stay healthy, the wear and tear on your body, those types of things. But the other thing to think about at the college level is the length of the seasons and when they start and how That's they overlap. It's not as simple as, say, in high school you play football and football is completely over with and then you start basketball and then basketball is completely over with and then you run track. It's not like that. When I played college basketball, one of my teammates played football and basketball. Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't even come to his – football season wasn't even over until we were – two or three games into our season, not just practices, you know, it had that level of like overlap. So right. you basically, at the college level, he missed so much. He missed, like I say, two or three games, that obviously a ton of practices in the preseason. So it always took him till well after like Christmas break, really to be in a situation where he could take the floor and really play. I suppose it might be a little bit easier if you play like football and then a spring sport like baseball. Mm-hmm. But you'd still run into some of that summer stuff, how late's baseball go, when's football get started. And I think at the college level too, at the high school level, not all coaches do a great job of understanding and sharing athletes, but as a whole, I think high school coaches understand it more. You know, hey, look, this is the way it is. Kids are going to play two, three different things. We got to work together here. At the college level, that coach is getting paid to coach that sport, you know. Right. And it's not that he doesn't care about the other sports, but this is his baby. This is it. I mean, this is the way I make my living. This isn't a supplemental contract. This is my living at coaching this football team. And I don't really care if you need to be at baseball practice. You need to be here for me. You know? And it's those types of situations, too, where the coaches aren't going to be maybe sometimes as understanding. I would encourage any kid that is trying to do that to really be upfront and open in the recruiting process with that school. You know, don't just keep it under your hat, go there and say, oh, by the way, I'm going to play. You know, get it out there, talk about it, see how those coaches react to it, because you don't want to go into a situation that's going to be uncomfortable right from the start.
Well, and it's interesting, some of the things you were saying there, Mac, because this is one of the things that you and I had not talked about. I had it down at the bottom of the agenda, and I was hoping to have time for it. And I think what's interesting is with basketball and football, I might not see it as much, but at the smaller schools, as I talk to some of these, some of the coaches have worked together a little bit in some of the secondary sports, if you will, because I think what happens is they try to get creative in their scholarship use. You know, a lot of those bigger schools and some of the major sports, they have a little bit more of their own scholarships or scholarships that, you know, they have enough to go across the board. But a lot of times you might see a baseball coach work with another sport, or a softball and a volleyball coach work, because they're able to maybe split some of that financial things and spread it across. You know, now obviously at the Division III level, they don't really give the money, but couldn't you see at the NAIA level where that's probably going to be a little bit more beneficial for the coaches?
Well, and I think you're exactly right. And here's another way to look at that too. If you are at an NAIA school or a Division II school, let's say, and here's this athlete who you think is a Division I caliber athlete, but he really wants to play two sports. He really wants to play. And at the Division I level, that's, I'm sure, frowned upon way more than it's not.
Sure,
you know.
Sure.
So, hey, buddy, you come here. I know this is, you know, D2 NAIA, but we're going to pay for your education the same, and you can play both sports, and we'll support you doing it. And they do that as a way to get a Division I athlete to come to them. You know, if you're a basketball coach and football coach, you sit down for lunch. Listen, if we can work together on this, this kid's coming to us. You know what I mean? And not going. Right. So I think there's some of that too. So yeah, financial creativity, the ability maybe to get that athlete that you wouldn't otherwise get. I think there's a lot that goes into it.
Well, I'll tell you what, great discussion going on. We knew when this started it was probably going to be something that would carry on throughout the entire fall. And what happens is each time I talk to different people about it, it seems like the conversation adds another little subtopic and another subtopic and another subtopic. So, you know, what it kind of started just as a three-sport athlete and why and some different things that I'm kind of surveying some student athletes across the SVC, it's interesting to kind of look at the college level as well. So fans, before we get out of here, let me tell you one more time, SVC Sport Zone on Twitter, on Facebook. Make sure you follow me on Shoutomatic. And then you can also let us know in the inbox at admin1@svcsportzone.com. And then, of course, as always, we encourage you to give us a call. Just wait for the beep there. Leave us a voicemail. Bruce will get you on the show at 740-569-3254. Well, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other fine sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and the fine people at DBK Media Services, and for Matt Combs, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportzone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.